Who's that random guy giving Nux a cutch?
All right, so we got Chase Darnot with us, MLB vet, renaissance man. He's got his band, his media company. Thanks for joining the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for taking interest.
So yesterday I saw a tweet you had. It was first year out of a baseball uniform was driving me crazy. How is this first year without spring training and now summer camp?
It's tough to tell the difference, like whether or not it's just COVID and being cooped up that's affecting me or being out of a uniform. I think it's just a lot of both, right? Like most players struggle. First year is the hardest, especially when spring training starts, because you are injected with this FOMO once everybody leaves and goes to train. So I went through that in January, February, when all my buddies were like, all right, here we go. Time to get ready for the season. Just got done training and they all left. And then here I was just continuing to shoot and edit. Luckily, I've been able to somewhat be a part of it because I'd go to Arizona or Florida and shoot with some guys to create some content with them. And that was my way of exiting the game and kind of being a part of it.
Kind of being a part of it still.
Yep. And then COVID hit and it was just, boom, no more traveling. You're hanging.
Yeah.
But all players are in that light.
What was your decision to retire? I mean, you could still be playing right now.
I could, and there's a big part of me that talks to myself and says, just get out there and get back out there on the field and do it. You miss it. You're in shape still. Go ahead and do it. But then that voice has been louder than the other one that's been saying, just stick to what you're doing. You get to hang with your family now. I have two kids.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me being away from them for 2 weeks at a time. And this offseason, my wife had told me how much she'd prefer to stay back with the kids because it's stressful traveling with them and being a single mom without any support system around you for 2 weeks at a time if I'm going on a road trip. So what ended up happening was I took that into consideration. I'd started a media company, production group last year that was going well, and I had some great partners, and I was making content with some great companies, like Baseballism being one of them. I stayed true to my values and found myself in a position where I had a choice to continue earning a living in production or continue going in baseball. And because I would get more time with my kids going the production route, I chose that. I was 33 years old coming off of a so-so year. I've had a great career, and I feel like there's value in what I'm bringing to the table from a content standpoint. So
yeah, I mean,
go this route.
You played with multiple ball clubs. You could see all your bags in the back. You did have a fine career. I've watched you a lot. And now you're doing the Journeyman series, which you spoke of. Is that always something you knew you wanted to do, like while you were playing? I know last year you kind of tracked yourself in AAA, but mid 2010s, did you know that this was something you were going to do?
No. I didn't. In 2016, I was in a band. This is while I was playing with the Braves, and we had some amazing opportunities. We played at the Bonnaroo Music Festival.
I saw that.
Lady Antebellum. We headlined a couple shows at other various venues, like Eddie's Attic. We just tried to hit all the iconic venues, and it was that year that I realized how powerful content could be. We had a very talented shooter and editor that I became really good friends with, who lived with us. We had the whole band living together that year. What ball player does but sitting next to him, watching him edit the footage that he gathered, was this storm of storytelling that took songwriting to another level for me. Because through songwriting, you can communicate and express yourself and tell a story and evoke emotion. But through editing, you have even more to work with. On top of the music, so your music choice, you have someone's dialogue, right? So like right now, you're interviewing me, mm-hmm. and something that I say with music behind it and some B-roll going on top of that, you have multiple storylines going on at once. And in music, it's not quite the same. So I fell in love with that aspect of it, storytelling through film. And so I started documenting. I figured now is a great time to just start capturing everything around me, because I don't know any other ball players that did it, and I just wanted to make sure I had it in quality form. So I went ahead and purchased a second full-frame camera and started interviewing players, coaches, wives, girlfriends, and getting behind-the-scenes content.
Clubhouse manager.
Clubhouse managers. And I've been using the Journeyman series. The stuff I've put out so far is just little snippets of what I have. But all the really good stuff that I have, I'm just holding on to because I don't want to do a disservice, because I know how valuable it is that a ball player for the last 5 years career up in the big leagues documented behind the scenes stuff, high quality. So I just don't want to do that content a disservice. I'm holding that close to my chest still till I find the right producers, storytellers that want to help me put that out and distribute.
Well, you've obviously, yeah. I'm sure you've built up a great network of teammates and friends. So it's on the right track for sure. How did the Baseballism co-brand come about? Because that's a great company.
Great company. I love Baseballism. This fan made this, and they put the Darnell Media Group and the Baseballism logo right there from the Journeyman series. I got this in the mail recently. So the Journeyman series started in 2019. Just tracking what it was like being a ball player that wasn't a superstar, somebody that's going through those ups and downs constantly throughout their career. And they watched that, and they were fans of the Journeyman series. They liked that father and son and the whole family could watch it together. It represented baseball the way that they want the game to be represented. So they called me and told me how much they liked it and said they wanted to collaborate on a series. And so what came to be was Ball Players Like Us video series, where I would interview baseball players one-on-one. Camera right here. Sometimes I put it on a tripod, but I like the feel when the background is moving a little bit. So I prefer to hold the camera. And ball players are, I dig and dive and have intimate conversations with ball players. And I pick my favorite 2 minutes, whatever my favorite message is. And Travis Chalk, the CEO of Baseballism, will collaborate with me, and I'll send him the footage. And we come up with an idea of whatever message we like the best is what we put out. It's meant for young athletes and also parents, because there's a lot of insight that you can get from an athlete.
Yeah, if there's one thing that as fans we like is when we can relate to the athletes we're watching on television. Like, mm-hmm. They're just like us. So it's definitely a great idea.
Yeah, it makes them, it humanizes them a little more. I felt like the Journeyman season really humanized me. Yeah, it takes a lot. It's a vulnerable position that I put myself in to, I worked with the videographer and allowed him to document what it was like, even around my family for a little while. A lot of people thought it was interesting. More ball players are starting to realize that the more you put yourself out there and just share your interests with other people, the stronger the connection becomes with your fan base.
Yeah. We spoke a little bit earlier about Trevor Bauer, what he's doing. And that's a perfect example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you, with the pandemic, are you still getting guests and creating content, or is it kind of on hold until you can be one-on-one and traveling with them?
I because I have so much content, I considered continuing to edit and put stuff out, but I put it on pause for a little while. It takes a lot of time to create those episodes.
Absolutely.
You know, especially the ones I haven't released yet. I've been working on stuff that I haven't put out yet behind the scenes. I just wanted to focus on hanging out with my family. The pandemic provided the Darno family with an opportunity to hang out during the summer where we grew up. My brother, Travis, who still plays. So we're both going our separate routes during the season, playing baseball. And sometimes we see each other during a season. My sister, Lindsay, who is in med school she's in Bloomington right now. And then my parents are here in Long Beach. So we're all together for about 4 months straight. And we haven't been able to do that since high school. To go to the beach together. This is before COVID was too, you know, it lined up for a while, but we got to have some experiences that we normally wouldn't have been able to have. So I took that time during the pandemic to just hang with them.
Well, that's awesome. The Journeyman series, it's kind of marked after your career. You've played with a bunch of teams. What year to you from your big league career sticks out to you as your favorite or most memorable?
A lot of things flash. A lot of things are coming up, but when it comes to the coolest story in itself, like I love playing for all these teams.
Yeah. But
what happened with the Braves while I was simultaneously playing ball? I was playing good ball too.
2016 was a really good year for you.
2016, when I embarked on this journey with a friend of mine who's a producer, and we created an album together during spring training. We documented the whole thing. I have like 4 terabytes worth of footage that hasn't seen the light of day from 2016. Because I thought it'd be a cool story. I started the year in AAA and after creating an album during spring training in Orlando. 2 weeks into the season, I got called up to play the Braves. And then they heard the music, saw that we came out with an album, and they really liked it so much that they helped us promote it. And their promotion helped us land our opportunity to play at the Bonnaroo Music Festival. And once you do that, it really opened up even more doors. And we ended up opening up for Lady Antebellum, like we covered earlier. Like even that in itself makes the year very interesting.
Yeah.
But on top of that, to be playing Major League Baseball at the same time, I think a lot of people thought I was crazy. But luckily, my first couple of months, I was hitting over 300, which really helped. Because if I was struggling,
I'd be like, hey, concentrate.
Yeah. And that was the biggest worry that my parents, my agent had before the season even started, because I told them what I was going to do. And, I could tell that they weren't really sure if it was the right move. I just kept reassuring them that baseball is going to be the first priority. And my outlook on it was, worst thing that could happen is that I have some friends out there with me during the season and I'll get better at music,
hone
in on my craft and become a better singer and musician just because we played so much. And with that outlook, things just panned out the way they did. It was insane.
Yeah, that was a memorable year and a memorable team. A lot of really good guys in that team. Jeff Francoeur, I think Gordon Beckham. It was a cool team.
Yeah.
And then you guys had the Fort Bragg game in there as well.
Yep. Uh huh.
What do you remember from playing that? I think it was the first time ever that a Major League Baseball game was played on a military base. Okay.
I was begging them to play outfield and especially center field, but we had Ender Inciarte out there.
Yes.
Ender covers some ground. He's got a hose. Yeah. Like he's the kind of guy who, if a guy hits a línea that he knows is going to be off the wall, he'll pretend like he's going to catch it to slow the runners down. Then it hits the wall and he grabs it and throws it in. Like his instincts are uncanny. He's amazing. But they chose to let me play center field during the Fort Bragg game because Ender was hurt. And the lights were half the height of what they normally are at a big league game.
Yeah.
So some balls were hit up in the air that I lost because the balls went up too high and I looked terrible out there. That's so performance wise. That's what I remember from the Fort Bragg game. I felt like I embarrassed myself in center field. But to be able to go out there and see the installment, see what it was like for those guys. We had some opportunities to go see how those guys live over there in Fort Bragg. And that was a very special opportunity that we had to go down there. It's just got lucky that I was on the team at the right time to be able to go experience that.
And that was the last year at Turner Field. And then you were still with the team in the transition into the new park, SunTrust Park, I think.
Yep. Yeah. So closed down Turner and then started the next year at SunTrust's beautiful stadium.
Can you speak about Braves fans a little bit? They're supposed to be some of the best in the world.
I miss the Braves. When Travis when he told me that he was thinking about signing with the Braves, I told him, do it, man, you'll love it. Super family-oriented fan base. Southern hospitality is a real thing. Being in California, growing up in California and then experiencing what that's like there with Southern hospitality, it's strikingly different. People behave differently. They're so polite and caring and good people out there. And the organization is the same way. Super family oriented. I feel like everything was done fairly. They took care of our families when they came to games. I loved my experience there. And the fans were great.
Yeah. When I was talking to my brother and I told him that I had you coming on the show, he said, he's a big Mets fan. He said that you played a role in Travis signing with the Braves. So
yeah. A little bit. It was between the Braves and one or two other teams. But I was hoping that he would sign with the Braves.
So you played center field in the Fort Bragg game, and you throughout your career you played every position except catcher.
Yeah.
You finally got on the hill in 2018 with the Giants. Did you let the manager know, you know, at some point during the season, hey, if you ever need me to go, I could do it? Or was that like a spur of the moment thing? How did that work out?
It was a spur of the moment thing. Bochy, if I were to tell the story, so we're in Cincinnati, it's hot, right? Later in the season. And we were just starting to slip a little bit. Like, we're contenders when I first joined the team. But then a month and a half in, things started to turn. And they weren't going that well. And we were getting clobbered 12-0. And when that happens, you don't want to waste your pitching. So Bochy came up to me and asked me, he said, like, Chase, Chase, have you ever pitched before? He's like, yeah, I pitched last year for a little bit. He's like, how'd you do? It's like, four batters, three outs, no runs scored. He's like, okay, I don't like doing this. I already had to do this with Pablo, but I might need to use you today. And I could tell he felt really bad. But on the inside, like, of course, I wasn't happy about the fact that we were losing at the time. But on the inside, I was like, I would love to pitch in a big league game right now.
Yeah.
And they kept scoring runs, and we weren't. So he told me, like, Chase, you're up fourth this inning. So I went up and hit, fortunately hit a double. The inning ended with me on second base, and I looked into the dugout, and he's like this. I'm like, okay, here we go. So I had to take my gloves out of my back pockets,
yeah,
put them down. I went ahead and they had to take my arm sleeve off because you can't have a bunch of all the
–
you can't
have
stuff when you're a pitcher. You don't want to distract the hitter. Mm-hmm. Started just, you know, throwing some cutters up there and some two-seamers, just trying to use movement.
Yeah.
You don't want to blow your arm out. And the last thing you want to do is try to throw hard and then need Tommy John after the infielder goes in to pitch. Nick Huntley came up to me after I threw a few warm-up pitches. I think I threw like four. I was like, ready to go.
I'm good.
He's like, so Nick Huntley comes up to me. He's like, so what are you throwing? What are we doing for science right now? Glove over his mask like we're hiding something. Said, dude, you don't have to hide it, man. I was like, I'm going to throw 70% cutters and 30% two-seamers. Because I've got a really good cutter that I can manipulate the movement on it.
Okay.
So I'm just sitting there throwing about 78, averaging 78, and trying to rush the hitters as quickly as I could because I know how difficult it is to hit when a pitcher is really fast to the plate. So any edge that I could get on the hitters, I try to take advantage of. I didn't take much time in between pitches. I wanted to make them feel uncomfortable, but without throwing 98 miles an hour. And I faced four batters and got three guys out. Nobody scored. And it was amazing. It was a lot of fun. Didn't like losing at all. I love being with the Giants, but being able to pitch in a big league game was pretty special.
You have a 0.00 ERA, man.
I have a 0.0 ERA with three innings pitch total in pro ball. I'm very proud of that stat. I don't know if it was MLB or the MLBPA that sent me this shirt, but I have a shirt that was sent to me that says position player pitcher. It was so cool. I was pumped. I think it was Cut4 sent it to
me. Cut4 always does that when a position player is in, they do like this funky tweet that people really like.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned that some of the guys who are fast in the mound, are there any name that pops in your head that's like, man, that guy was tough to hit because he just didn't take any time between pitches? Or the opposite, too long in between pitches.
There's a guy from, gosh, why can't I think of his name right now? Lefty from the White Sox who is so fast. I can't think of his name right now.
If you think of it later, just throw it in and we'll make it work.
Yeah. I can't think of it. But I feel like Mike Leake was pretty fast at the plate a lot.
Yeah, Mike Leake.
The guys that are fast at the plate are also really hard to steal off of. Like, once you get on base, the guy's 1-1, every time you're going to shut it down as a base runner unless you time him up and leave before his leg actually goes. As a base stealer for me, I wanted to leave. If I was 1-2-5 or slower, I would take off and run. But off the top of my head, I can't think of any guys that really rushed me. I can think of guys that I struggled to hit, though, like Max Scherzer. I didn't enjoy facing him as much as I did other guys.
So we talked about 2016. 2017 was also, you know, super unique. You played for three teams in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? You started out with the Braves, then you went to Boston, and then San Diego. You were everywhere.
That's the first time I ever experienced getting put on waivers and getting picked up, where you immediately have to join another team, you're in a new clubhouse, getting used to a new environment, staff, everything. So completely new dynamic, two separate times. That was wild because my wife was pregnant at the time too.
Oh, wow.
Firstborn. So as soon as a month went by of the 2017 season, Snitker, the manager of the Braves, invited me to his room. We were in New York to play against Trav's team, and that stunk because I was looking forward to playing the Mets, but we weren't doing that well. I was just lowest on the totem pole at the time. They needed to make a move, some changes. So I got put on waivers, and I was going to go to AAA if I cleared. Are you familiar with the waiver process and how that works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 3 days into that, I got a call from the Red Sox to let me know that I was picked up by them. It was really exciting. My agent called me because it's the Red Sox. Man, it's one of the most iconic.
Fenway pack.
There, Fenway, Pedroia, Ortiz, like Manny Ramirez. Like, that was a team that I loved watching growing up. And even as a professional player, I was still keeping tabs on what would do. It was an exciting team. And when I joined them, I quickly realized how different their clubhouse culture was in comparison to other teams that I'd been with. Like, granted, this was the fourth or fifth organization I'd ever been with. But as soon as I got there, they were all about winning. They had each other's backs. During the first hitters meeting, Hanley Ramirez did something that blew my mind. Everybody was already really cool when I joined the team. The coach said, guys, we have a new player, Chase Darno. Say what's up to him. And everybody's like, hey, what's going on, man? I'd already said hi to most of them already. And then Hanley Ramirez leans back a little bit. He's no row ahead of me. He's like, yo, it's like, Chase, it's like, if you mess up, man, we got your back. We all screw up. We let it go. It's not going to fester. Like, we got your back, man.
As a hitter, that's awesome to know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. As a hitter, defender, everything, it takes the load off. And because we are human, we do make mistakes. And the one thing you want to do is to have that good first impression, right, with a team and make sure that you come off with a strong start. I ended up not getting one start with them, right? And then I went to, I was with them for a month. Brock Holt had vertigo at the time. That's why they needed me for that month. I played multiple positions, just like their super utility player, Brock Holt. A month later, I ended up a month later, I went to the I'm still thinking about the Red Sox. I haven't thought about this stuff in a while, so it's just kind of fun for you to ask me these questions because I really enjoyed every moment of my career. So a month later, I was put on waivers again, and I was picked up by the Padres, 2 hours away from where I grew up. Had some friends visiting. It was easy for family to duck out to watch me play. The weather was really nice. It's, Machado's there now, and I'm sure he's enjoying it. Yeah,
and
that was a wonderful experience.
In San Diego, I remember I went there one time, and before I went, everyone's like, San Diego might be the best city on the planet. Best city in the United States. Like, people are so nice there.
Mm-hmm.
And it lived up. San Diego was awesome.
What'd you do while you were there?
I went to Gaslight District, checked out the park, Petco Park. Every time I go to a new city, I hit the ballpark. I'm trying to hit every park. I don't know if you've probably done it already.
You should. Oh yeah, I would love to do that as a fan. In fact, that's one of the things that we're planning on doing for Journeyman 2020 and 2021. So a buddy of mine who's a videographer and I are going to travel to different stadiums, showcasing them and showing all the highlights of what makes the stadiums unique. And it's going to be like me sitting next to the fountain in Kauffman Stadium where the Royals play, hearing the water gushing. Like, I haven't experienced being a fan, but I'm looking forward to that next endeavor once COVID lightens up.
Yeah, you have some really good ideas. And I hope you go forth with that because that would be really cool to watch.
Yeah,
as far as playing in all these stadiums, what are some of your favorite stadiums to play in?
I like different stadiums for different reasons.
Okay.
You know, like the more hitter-friendly ones, the best.
Yeah.
Because ball flies, it's easy to see. I love playing in Arizona, Milwaukee, especially Milwaukee. I feel like you could miss a ball there and it'd go pretty deep still. Cincinnati, ball flew really well, even though it's not a dome. PNC is one of the most beautiful parks to play in.
Oh, man.
Ball flies like other parks, but with the bridges in the background, I guess that's where I got called up. That's where I played, coincidentally, my debut was against the Red Sox. Lester was pitching, Manny Ramirez in left field. It was pretty cool.
But I have a rookie card of yours from when you were with the Pirates.
Oh yeah, what is it, the one with Andrew
McCutchen? I have it here if I'm gonna show it to you.
Yeah, let's see it.
With McCutchen.
Oh yeah, cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I feel like he makes my rookie league, my rookie card cool. It's not me. I'm just like, who's that random guy giving Nux to Kutch?
And another coincidence, Kutch was with the Giants when you played with them too, right?
Yeah. It was, and once you play with multiple teams, you start to make more friendships and know people. But Kutch was with the Giants along with Mark Melanson on that team, Tony Watson also. Longoria grew up in the same area and went to Long Beach State. Crawford and I played together and against each other growing up quite a bit. Brennan Crawford, Buster Posey, all those guys that are that age, the Crawford belt, like I played against them in coming up in the minor leagues a ton. So I felt really at home with that team right at the get-go when I got there for spring training. And I felt the same way with the Red Sox too. I knew a lot of those guys. So it's whenever you know some guys on the team, it makes you feel a lot more settled in. And they know you and they can speak highly of you because some people are just like, okay, this new guy, I'm not comfortable around him yet. But when you have a couple players that are significant vouching for you, it changes the complexion of how things are perceived.
Yeah, baseball is like a family, you know, like you're playing against guys. And then at the next level, you might be on different teams where you're playing against the same guys. Mm-hmm. That's how it worked out for me. And that's pretty much how it goes in when you're coming up in the baseball ranks, you know.
Yeah, you want to get along with everybody. Man. I'm an oddball. I'll be the first to tell you, like, I know that I'm different. And I've had plenty of people tell me that. And I've just had to embrace it. Instead of being self-conscious about it, I just try to embrace any differences, anything that makes me different and unique. I just have to be myself. Because if I hear you, man. That, it affects my play on the field. And so I always encourage players to always be themselves and be open and not worry too much if somebody likes you or not. Like, if you go in there with an open heart and you're ready to accept other people on the team, everything should go just fine.
Well, I think, you know, within the last five to probably this last decade, things have been changing more for the better. You can be more yourself. You're not so, like, you know, pigeonholed to this, like, athlete. You can kind of be yourself and feel more comfortable, and people are more accepting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time. Media is – I never thought that things were going to go in this direction. In 2009, I was in low A. Twitter was just created, right? Mm-hmm. And immediately our social media teams, like, I don't even know if they were using the term like social media yet. They're like, guys, Twitter, stay off of it. What you put out there is going to be used against you. Be really careful what you put out there. So early on, I had some people to warn me to be careful what you put out there and that it's there forever. Now, a lot of people are getting backlash now that are in their like mid-20s from stuff that they put out on Twitter when they were in middle school and high school. If there was a Twitter when I was in middle school and high school, I might have put my foot in my mouth too then. Like, it's understandable. It's, you do have to be really careful what you put out there. As athletes, when you're wearing a major league uniform, you could give a kid a high five and this can change the complexion of his day. Like, his day was already great. He's at a major league field, but he just got high five from this major leaguer and they probably didn't even know my name, but he just remembers it like, wow, like I high fived a big leaguer today. That's I take that seriously. We're role models. So what we do put out there in social media, I feel like we just need to keep that in mind, that little kids are looking up to us.
For sure. Any advice for young hitters growing up? You know, baseball can be a tough mental game if you have an 0-for-4, if you get into a little bit of a slump.
I know how, like you have players like Kobe Bryant, right? Basketball, he was really hard on himself. He put a lot of time in. And it's really easy for a player to put that time in and that effort, but be doing something wrong mechanically. And so they're ingraining the wrong muscle memory.
Practice makes permanent.
Like funky. Yeah, practice makes permanent. But so to avoid saying anything mechanical or too like heady, I feel like it's important to make sure that you're choosing your friends wisely within a team. And even that support group outside of the team, like know what is, like if you're hanging out with some guys that you know aren't the best people and you're hanging out with them a lot and trying to impress them, it's only going to affect you negatively. Like, you need to choose your friends wisely and especially your role models. Make sure that when you decide who your best player is and that you want to be just like them and having a career like them, pay attention to what they're doing, all the little fine details. There's so much information nowadays at your fingertips and your device.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Like, use it. Take advantage of all the information that's out there. There's a lot of crap out there.
Yeah.
That's correct. A lot of coaches that don't know what they're talking about but have a lot of followers. There's some great coaches that didn't play the game but are still amazing and know what they're talking about. So you really have to just try things out and see what works for you. But having a good support group and a good group of friends that all are ambitious and want to succeed the same way you do is important to thrive.
Not going to keep you here too much longer. What are your thoughts on some of the new rule changes that are going into this upcoming baseball season? DH in both leagues.
Remind me what these rules, okay?
DH in both leagues, which is probably the biggest one. The three batter rule. I think that might have been there last year as well. Each pitcher has to face three batters. Yeah.
And that'll speed the game up. That's why they did that. Yeah. Yeah. To be honest, like, there being a DH in the National League now doesn't bother me. I know that there are purists out there that want to keep the game the same, keep going extra innings. I think it'd be a lot of fun if they did a home run derby. After 10 innings or 11 innings and nobody wins, like, get your biggest bopper and your best BP thrower, and like, each guy gets 5 to 10 pitches, and whoever hits the most amount of homers, like, that's exciting.
They are doing – so the extra inning rule this year is extra innings starts with a guy in second base.
They're doing that in the big leagues?
Yeah. They do it in the indies, I think, and they're using it this year for the shortened season. So,
In the minor leagues, when we did that, games didn't last very long after that point. Yeah, like somebody would win within the first two innings. So
that could be a good thing, right?
That'll definitely speed the game up. I think the reason they got – having a DH in the National League will make things a little more fair for all-star games.
Yeah, true.
Moving forward. Yeah, it'll make things more fair when it comes to that National League versus American League. But I didn't really care to watch pitchers hit. Like, even when I'm in a shortstop, it's like, okay, the pitcher's up, probably going to roll over to me or pop out or something like that. It's just, it's not as exciting as seeing somebody like David Ortiz step in who can do some damage.
Like a real DH, like, you know, Frank Thomas or, you know.
Right. There's less thinking involved being a manager. That's one less thing to think about. There aren't going to be many double switches. So yeah. I think that most teams are going to carry, like, versatility is huge right now in the game.
Yeah.
They're having a lot of guys at young levels when they first get drafted, starting to play center, short, third, second, all over the place. So the more versatility, the better. So yeah, that's one thing that I'm noticing. The Dodgers have had so much success with that.
I spoke with Richie Schaefer, who's a first round pick with the Rays. And he said when he got up to the bigs, he was like, I'll play the outfield, like, any way to get in the game. So, yeah, the versatilities.
Yeah, that was an interesting interview. Like, he threw out his numbers, like how well he did in indie ball the previous year. He hit almost 30 home runs.
Yeah, 27 home runs his last year.
Yeah, he was quick to pull the shoot on his career. I mean, how old was he at the time when he stopped playing?
He's still young. He's 20-something.
Yeah, it made me want to talk to him a little bit. Just be like, man, keep playing.
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know what he wants, but you guys have the you're in the fraternity together, so
put me in touch.
Okay, no doubt. Before I let you go, tell me, is the Chase Darnell band still intact?
No, it's not intact. As soon as I had kids, and it's not intact, and we haven't done anything since 2017 because baseball is so consuming, right? Yeah. You have to obsess over to do really well. And I feel like I didn't want to be an absentee dad, right? Oh, like, if I'm playing baseball and then I go on a tour after the season, which I did after the 2016 season, like a little mini tour.
It's a full year.
Still a lot of work. Yeah, that's a lot of work. And I wouldn't be around as much as I'd like to. I don't want a kid put my child through that. So I decided to refocus and invest in my baseball game. And that's why I started working with Craig Wallenbrock, that hitting consultant I mentioned. And that was wonderful, right? Like, I invested in my mental game a few years before that, after my 2013 season, and that really worked out. So, you know, I empower all baseball players to, like, it's one thing to look up something online and to read it and apply it, but to be able to just hear it right out of the person's mouth and work with somebody who has some great eyes and can get a feel for you, help you out. It's worth it. It's worth it. And a lot of really good ball players are working with consultants nowadays.
For sure. So Chase has a Journeyman series on YouTube. Where can everyone find you on social?
On social, at Chase Darno. It's first and last name. Keeping it simple. Yeah, try to keep it simple. In fact, I would love to get your take on something.
Sure.
So I have a YouTube account.
Mm-hmm.
That is a personal verified YouTube account that, like, I didn't get verified. It just happens to be verified. Okay. I have some stuff up there with about 800 subscribers. Haven't put a whole lot up there. The Journeyman series I put together at the beginning of 2019 and has about a little less than 3,000 subscribers. Haven't tried really promoting it that hard yet with other YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asking people, should I just transfer everything from there onto my personal one and run with the personal one that's verified and start promoting that one? Or should I stick to the Journeyman series and just keep building that one out?
I think you have one thing that a lot of people don't, and that's some name recognition. So I would capitalize on that as much as I could.
Mm.
For sure.
Yeah. Because it's tough to be doing both channels.
No, I hear you. I have, you have two different socials too, Instagrams too. So I feel you, man. If you could roll it all into one on YouTube, like, I'm sure the subscribers will, if that's the page you're feeding, you know what I mean? You have a built-in, a loyal fan base of Journeyman followers. They'll migrate right over, I'm sure.
Okay.
All right, Chase, thank you so much for jumping on. Really generous with your time and very, very insightful.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. This was fun. I like talking baseball. So
yeah, totally. If you need anything in terms of like any of the anything that I can help you out with, I'd be happy to do that.
Cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how this comes out.
All right, for sure, man. Thank you, bud.
Right. Later, Case.
Later. See you later.